Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Well, storms are a way of life in New England. So how do you decide if a community has successfully handled a storm or any major event? And does that success largely depend on planning and things like travel bans, or does a lot of it depend on circumstances and luck? Our next guest says it's all about resilience, and she calls Boston a leader among world cities in demonstrating that it can handle crises and bounce back well. Judith Roden is president of the Rockefeller Foundation. Her latest book is The Resilience Dividend, Being Strong in a World Where Things Go Wrong. We spoke with Roden earlier today, and we began by asking her what this week's blizzard says about Boston's resiliency.
Boston has built the capacity to prepare for any crisis. And so if you prepare for any crisis, whether it's a blizzard or a hurricane or a terrorist attack, you can be ready for any crisis. And I think we saw in the response so far, and of course, the story is still unfolding, a great deal of benefits from preparedness planning, significant coordination between state and local officials, great coordination among the various agencies that would be responsible, clearly snow removal and transit, but also the kind of services or lifelines, if you will, of a city that are necessary to be in constant communication if something goes down. So Boston has demonstrated in this, as they demonstrated in the marathon bombings, the capacity to be resilient because they've prepared. It's not a fundamental trait that you inherit. It's a skill and a capacity that's developed, and Boston has done so.
Well, let's talk about the marathon bombings, because you mention the bombings in your book, where you cite several examples of organizations and cities where resiliency is demonstrated. But one thing that was interesting there is, obviously, this was something that was completely unexpected by anyone. And as Governor Patrick, former Governor Patrick, has repeatedly said, you know, he was going to get food at a Thai restaurant and found out about the marathon bombings from his daughter, right? Mayor Tom Menino, former Mayor Menino, the late Tom Menino, was in the hospital at the time. And there was no sort of official leading that response. Yet, that wasn't crucial because the city was still able, and the state was still able to respond successfully to probably the biggest attack that it had ever experienced. Explain why that was.
I think it starts by explaining resilience. Resilience is about investing and planning in the good times so that we are prepared for the bad times. It increases readiness for any disruption. It improves responsiveness to disruptions that can't be avoided. And it actually can revitalize and adapt in the face of disruption so it does better in future crises. Boston had practiced, as I said, practiced for any kind of emergency. And so everyone knew who was on first. They knew which police authorities were critical. They knew who the first responders were. And so they didn't need the mayor in the first minutes or the governor in the first hour to be there directing traffic or telling people what to do.
But I think that, there were certain things that helped the response to the marathon bombings be successful that were really just chance, right? It was the location of where this happened. Had they been further from hospitals, it would have been a real problem for folks. There were things there that really were lucky, if you will, that can't be completely underestimated here.
Preparation turns luck into opportunity. So absolutely, nobody can predict in advance all the bad things that may make it go wrong, and nobody can predict exactly in advance all the lucky events that can help facilitate. But if they hadn't practiced, if they hadn't prepared for any event, not just for bombings, not just for terrorist attacks, they would not have been able to take advantage of those other fortuitous circumstances. So again, you may call it good luck, We call it resilience planning and preparation, and it is absolutely critical. Boston then did more in its recovery. So the second phase of building resilience after preparation is how you recover and how you plan your recovery so that you don't build back the same vulnerabilities that were detected when the disruption occurred, but you try to grow and adapt and revitalize and change as a result. And so Boston did even better in this blizzard because of what it learned through the terrorist attack.
Let's talk a little bit about striking the correct balance between, you know, being prepared and vigilant and also maintaining calm and not scaring people. There was a lot of criticism here in Boston, particularly right after the bombings when folks were looking for the suspected marathon bombers. And the city went into complete lockdown in many of the surrounding areas and everything was shut down. There were many critics who said, you know, are we going to lock down millions of people here to look for an unarmed 19-year-old who we later learned was found in an area that should have been searched? I mean, how do you strike that balance?
It's always great to be a Monday morning quarterback. So they didn't know he was a 19-year-old unarmed who happened to be found close to the site. It's easy to say that in retrospect. Mm-hmm. So I will not comment on the specific measure that the city took, but as many case studies have been written about this, the fact that the governor communicated so intensively with the general public during that period, telling them what was known and what wasn't known, mitigated some of the negative reaction to the lockdown, really minimize the spread of digital wildfires, which increases fear-mongering and rumor transmission, which in an instance like this is usually significantly greater than what we saw in Boston.
So in that particular case, we do need an official voice. We need an official that will be reassuring.
It was practiced that Governor Patrick would be the official voice, regardless of what the crisis was. That was just part of the routine and decision-making that their tabletop and real practice exercises had determined. They also determined that the FBI would be the lead agency, regardless of what went on. And so, again, it is absolutely critical through the preparation for any event that cities build their capacity for resilience. But, Deborah, crisis is the new normal. We see this in cities around the world, whether it's a violent storm or a terrorist attack, whether it's a cyber attack or the next economic blow. And those cities that are more effective, those cities that do better, are those that are prepared, that rebound more effectively, and that use it as an opportunity for revitalization. And Boston is among them. Boston, in its application for the 100 Resilient Cities Global Network, talked about not only these kinds of situations, terrorism, blizzards, flooding, but Boston also talked about the slow-burning stresses that can erode the fabric of a city and make it less resilient. Inequality and poverty, the lack of affordable housing. I don't want to just talk about the emergency because Boston is examining itself in a very creative and holistic way.
Right. We should explain that a little bit. The Rockefeller Foundation has given Boston and 99 other cities funding to help become resilient, and that's why the city is creating this position of chief resiliency officer.
That's right. This is someone who will report directly to the mayor and who will be tasked with integrating both across all of the silos of municipal government, but also integrating the capacity of government with private sector capacities, with academic capacities, and with civil society throughout Boston.
So overall then, I mean, in terms of looking at resiliency as a factor, I mean, it sounds like we're not just talking about storms or, you know, terrorist attacks. We're talking about why this is important to everyday life, really.
Exactly. We're talking about the things that have the potential to rip apart the social and economic fabric of a city, of a region, of a nation. And the reason that I call the book The Resilience Dividend is that I give case after case and story after story of how investing in resilience building for the bad times yields dividends in the good times in terms of new jobs created, better physical and social and natural infrastructure, and building greater community assets. So it's a terrific win.
I want to go back to the marathon bombing for a moment, because you brought something up when you wrote about that, and that was bringing people together. And you talked about social cohesion and faith communities and their role in all of this. And you actually talked about the memorial service that was held in Boston 3 days after the bombings. And you mentioned Nancy Taylor, the senior minister and CEO of Boston's Old South Church. We have a clip from that interfaith service that I'd like to play right now. Let's listen.
Here's what I know today. We are shaken, but we are not forsaken. Another's hate will not make of us haters. Another's cruelty will only redouble our mercy. Amen.
That's a cut from Nancy Taylor, the senior minister and CEO of Boston's Old South Church, a couple of days after the marathon bombings in 2013. Judith Roden, why mention that? Why is that important? And what does that say about resiliency in a community?
Because whether it's faith or other elements of what make communities cohesive and strong, there is a tremendous need for communities to come together, to trust one another so that they can be strong in times of crisis. And that rebuilding, when there is an attack of one kind or another, or a storm that produces the need for people to help one another, really can be the difference between succeeding or failing.
Judith Roden, president of the Rockefeller Foundation. Her latest book is The Resilience Dividend, Being Strong in a World Where Things Go Wrong. Judith, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you again for having me. And good luck digging out.
Thanks. We're going to need it. Stay with us. Coming up, do tests like the SAT benefit the privileged and harm the mission of higher education? I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.